This summer, I'm taking a new approach to styling the smallest spaces in my house with help from Bob's Discount Furniture. Bob's has the small space solutions that America's waited 250 years for, like retro chic bedroom sets with plenty of storage, dinner party ready dining sets in four fun colors, stylish spacious Bobopedic sofas, and feature-packed power recliners that let me kick back in even the smallest rooms. Plus, I know that Bob's styles are backed by thousands of real five-star customer reviews, so I can trust that the furniture that I'm getting is not just affordable, but built to last. And the best part? Bob's furniture ships fast, so I can enjoy my new styles all summer long. So when you're ready to ditch the furniture you're not excited about for the latest trends in small space styling, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
All right, we have a fair amount of breaking news right now. CENTCOM announced a little after 4 o'clock Central Time, at the direction of the Commander-in-Chief, President Trump, they have responded to the downing of the U.S. Army Apache helicopter. And the CENTCOM tweet says the mission is a proportional response to unjustified Iranian aggression. Jen Griffin at Fox reporting on this a short time ago.
We've just gotten word that based on that CENTCOM statement, we had extended this. The president had indicated that he must respond, given that there were two Americans in that Apache helicopter that had to be rescued at sea earlier today. So we were expecting this. But what's interesting from the statement that CENTCOM just put out is that it described these as defensive strikes, and they said that they would be proportional. So what we're looking at right now, there are some indications there are some explosions in a port city called Sirik. We're getting the initial reports of ongoing strikes from the Iranians themselves. The Iranian foreign minister earlier today had warned that if the U.S. escalated, there would be a very, very big response.
By the way, something just as a side note, this is crazy. The downed Apache crew that you heard her reference to, they were rescued by a drone. By some drone vessels that were in the water. So we don't know everything that's going on right now. Jacob Olodort is back with us, Chief Research Officer and Director of American Security at the America First Policy Institute. Jacob, welcome back. How are you this evening?
Mark, doing well. Privileged to be with you. Thank you.
I suppose we thought, because President Trump made it very clear that there was going to be some response to the downing of the Apache. And I don't know what proportional, you know, response means this afternoon. You heard the reference to the port maybe being attacked, but what are your expectations for what might be done or what's going on currently right now?
Right. First of all, I mean, it's certainly an important side note about the drone technology being used. But I think larger point, look, the rhetoric matters and the framing of these strikes matters. And so I think the United States is sending a very clear message to the Iranians. First of all, any harm to Americans, as the president said over the weekend, will be responded to by the United States. But it's giving Iran an off-ramp. By calling it defensive, proportionate, we are not saying that this is the totality of the response, should there be more. But look, look, we will respond, and that's sort of the message here.
You know, I don't think, if you were to ask me, use a word that you think would, you know, very accurately describe Donald J. Trump, I don't think patience would even be in my top 100 words, right? But he's being very, and I think a little bit more patient than I expected. Here's Mark Thiessen talking about this.
He's incredibly patient. The problem is, as great a deal maker as Donald Trump is, you have to have a negotiating partner who's willing to make a deal with you. And in Iran, it's very clear that he doesn't have a negotiating partner because there's no Delcy Rodriguez. You know, when you're talking about moderates versus, it's like saying that we killed Hitler and now we've got the really bad Nazis, or now we've got the moderate Nazis. There's no moderate Nazis, and they're no moderate Iranian Islamic radicals. And so you have to finish them militarily. And quite frankly, what's dangerous for the Republican Party going into the midterms is having this muddled situation going into the midterms. It has to end decisively in some way.
Well, I kind of agree with Mark there. And, you know, I don't know if there's a sense that Trump is talking to the right people, because you wouldn't ordinarily see him, you know, with this much patience in a situation like this. Would you agree?
All right. Well, and with no visibility, of course. But I think, look, it's patience. It's also a plan. And there is a clear, and it has to be a comprehensive approach, which it is for this president. There is, you've heard the phrase multidimensional chess going on. There are different aspects of the regime and what it does. And I think it's important what Mark Thiessen outlined, that we are not playing the fictional language game that the Obama team played of moderates versus radicals. I think this administration knows exactly who they're dealing with. And I think that they have been calibrating the economic, diplomatic, and military now pressure points exactly right to meet that overall plan.
So where does Israel fall into this? We know that a week ago this was all confirmed. You know, Trump did not like what Bibi was doing with Hezbollah, called them crazy. They both kind of came out of that, you know, confirming that the account took place and that Trump wasn't happy with them. Mentioned that a couple of times last week. What is the current situation, do you think, with Israel? Because there were more, I think there were more strikes on southern Lebanon today by the Israelis, too.
Yeah. Well, look, and I don't know, obviously, we don't know what the totality of what the president said to the prime minister. I mean, there's a lot of reporting out there, which is, you know, partial at best. But I think the bigger story here over the weekend, which I think is important for listeners, this is the first time that Iran fired at Israel in response to Israel launching strikes into Lebanon. And that's important. Usually it was in response to Israel firing directly at Iran. The message Iran is sending there is that it cares about the survival of Hezbollah, maybe just as much as its dreams of its nuclear ambitions. And I think that's important, and that's probably the tension point on the regime side. They have been making sure and pushing for Lebanon to be part of any negotiations. They understand that Hezbollah, I would call it, is existential to this regime's global terror network, including the U.S., including Western Hemisphere, Europe. All of that, and of course the Middle East, is coordinated through Hezbollah. And so if they lose Hezbollah and leverage there, they are significantly diminished in terms of what they're able to accomplish.
And I don't know why. So then the question, why wouldn't you want to minimize that as much as possible, right?
Well, that's right. And look, we all have distinct priority. I mean, Israel has a strategic existential priority in eradicating Hezbollah, its own threats from there. It's on their border with 100,000 missiles directly pointed at Israeli cities. But look, Hezbollah is responsible for the largest attack on U.S. Marines since the Battle of Iwo Jima, and that is the 1983 Marine Barracks.
That's right.
So this is part of our memory, our experience. And so, to your point, yeah.
So, do you, you know, here, missing in this conversation, and this is where I still get confused about how this might end. You can go in there and pound them more with bombs, and we know, I think we're pretty sure and convinced that the economic pressure from the blockade is doing immense damage to the economy, but we're still not really figuring out how to get the highly enriched uranium out of there.
Right. And there are a couple of pieces there, of course. I mean, look, at the end of the day, it may not be limited to the uranium itself. And we want a commitment from this regime that they will abandon their nuclear ambitions, which is a very tall order. But that is, you know, the threshold, I think, that we're thinking about. But, you know, part of it, look, it's a complex issue. I believe, and I have something I'm putting together in writing about Lebanon as a piece of this and Hezbollah as the path to the end state. I think the economic tools and pressure will remain. I think the blockade is working. So I think this will all take time. What will the outcome be as far as the Iranian regime is concerned? All that is unknown yet. But all that, I mean, the president's been clear. He's not rushing into a bad deal. And so I think we need to give the space to the administration to work through the negotiation. And as we're seeing today, respond as appropriate when necessary, too.
Yeah, this is all, you know, and I think you know this, the framework, or maybe not the framework, but what's happening behind the scenes here politically is also interesting because, look, the president is finding himself in a position with a lot of people who supported this, you know, action to begin with and certainly the goals of what he's trying to achieve in Iran. But they're also running out of patience from the perspective of there needs to be an end to this at this point. And that path is not clear. And your point, yeah, the president wants to get not a deal. He wants to get the best deal. He wants to get a good deal. But when you set expectations in the way that he did, I think that's where there's risk. Now we're going to get into, look, it won't be too long before we're at the 4th of July. It's only a few weeks away, and the clock is ticking very, very quickly toward, you know, the midterms. Now, he doesn't seem concerned about that because he's not doing this for political reasons, but you know, people behind the scenes, there's Republicans very nervous about this right now.
Right. No, and you and I have talked multiple weeks about this topic, and look, I think the reality is the Iranian regime is reading the politics closely. They believe they can use American domestic politics against the president, which obviously is misleading. But I think part of our response and awareness, look, there is pain, and no question about it, but there's a bigger picture, too. And I think that's important, because when we look, for example, at the Strait of Hormuz, on which we rely very little directly, of course, energy is a global commodity. But, you know, at the end of the day, and you've had CEOs say this as well, the risks of not doing this or of stopping too soon may mean the prices may be higher in the long term for longer. And so what we're doing now vis-a-vis Iran, yes, it's pain in the immediate, but it has global effect and making our, you know, our economic picture more stable, our well-being more stable. If you think about, you know, the Strait of Hormuz, you think about, you know, Iran's connectivity with Russia, which is also destabilized, you know, global energy there. You think about the Western Hemisphere, all of that, and even China, comes back to addressing this Iran issue, which we're right in the thick of right now.
No, so, that, and that's a fair point, Jacob, because look, as you point out, in geopolitics, I'm not an expert on geopolitics, right? But this is extremely complicated, very complicated globally.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Exactly. Appreciate the reporting. Thank you so much for coming on again with me this afternoon.
Thank you, sir.
Take care. That's Jacob Older. I want to kind of circle back just because the one part of this story, and you know, this kind of ties in with what we're going to do with George Rosenthal with Tech Talk Tuesdays. I mentioned this on the intro to Jacob there, though. This was a first of its kind U.S. military drone rescue that helped save these two aviators today. So the helicopter crashes near the Strait of Hormuz, and an unmanned Navy vessel locates the downed crew, brings them to safety after they're in the water for like 2 hours. I know that you're floating and you seem safe, but still, that's a long time to be hanging out in the middle of the ocean off the coast of Oman. Military officials say it was the first known at-sea rescue conducted by the U.S. military drone. That's amazing, isn't it? It's a 24-foot autonomous vessel. It's known as the Corsair and built by Saronic Technologies. It's assigned to the Naval's Task Force 59, the service's pioneering unit focused on uncrewed.
Gotcha.
It looked like unscrewed, though. Uncrewed and artificial intelligence-powered maritime operations. That's cool, though.
It is cool.
You know, this thing goes down. Okay, let's send the drone to pick them up.
I think, obviously, that's the future.
It is.
And boots on the ground, I would assume, will just become a less and less...
Oh, yeah.
Necessary thing as we figure all this stuff out.
I think you're right about that, which is a good thing. Yeah, modern warfare is changing dramatically, but this whole situation with Iran is still not, you know, totally in modern warfare because they're dropping bombs and shooting helicopters out of the sky and things like that. A little bit more reporting here from Jen Griffin. She's really good at Fox on some of this stuff, talking about the talks ongoing.
Well, we've just learned from a senior U.S. defense official that the strikes are ongoing as we speak right now, and that some of the targets that we can confirm at this point are air defense systems inside Iran, as well as radar installations. The initial explosions that we've seen reported on X out of Iranian sources suggest that Sirik, which is a port city, as well as Bandar Abbas, were among the targets. But what we can say at this point is that these airstrikes are ongoing. Flight trackers have seen about 8 KC-135 air refueling tankers above the Middle East, over the Gulf. presumably they would be in position to help refuel these American warplanes.
One of the questions then they had was about the Iranian drones.
Well, I think the problem with the drones is that they're mobile and they can be launched mobily. They do see them when they're launched. And I was told earlier today that they saw multiple drones being launched around the time that the Apache went down. In terms of proportion, so far, what we are seeing and hearing reported, if you're talking air defenses, that would fit the CENTCOM statement that these are defensive strikes and going after the radar. But it also could indicate that you would always take out the air defenses and radar installations before you had another wave of strikes, before you put American warplanes into any harm's way. So it's really unclear at this point. But what we can say is that the airstrikes targeting Iran are ongoing at this point.
Yeah, and again, this is something that's just been ongoing for the last hour. It was 4 p.m. Central when CENTCOM announced the strike. So it's still very much an active situation. And I love Jen. She's really good at this stuff. We'll stay on top of it as it is breaking news this evening on 97.1 FM.
This summer, I'm taking a new approach to styling the smallest spaces in my house with help from Bob's Discount Furniture. Bob's has the small space solutions that America's waited 250 years for, like retro chic bedroom sets with plenty of storage, dinner party ready dining sets in four fun colors, stylish, spacious, bobopedic sofas, and feature-packed power recliners that let me kick back in even the smallest rooms. Plus, I know that Bob's styles are backed by thousands of real five-star customer reviews, so I can trust that the furniture that I'm getting is not just affordable, but built to last. And the best part? Bob's furniture ships fast, so I can enjoy my new styles all summer long. So when you're ready to ditch the furniture you're not excited about for the latest trends in small space styling, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Tech Talk Tuesday, George Rosenthal coming up here at the bottom of the hour. Earlier this afternoon, I had Franny Block on from the Free Press. I'm a huge fan of the FP. Barry Weiss started this. CBS bought it for $100 million. They made her head of CBS News. But they do have different types of content. And as I always say with the Free Press, it's not like a daily newspaper where you go up there and every day everything is different. The reporting kind of lingers up there. And they have a lot of first-person accounts. You know, this is where Jamie Reed, our whistleblower from right here in St. Louis, came to notoriety because she put her whistleblower report in that first piece was in the Free Press. So, Sue, I know you have opinions about GLP-1s. We've talked about these weight loss medications. They're controversial. It seems like a lot of people who even don't need to be on them are on them. So, Blossom, Mayim Bialik, has written a fascinating piece.
Oh, and she's smart.
It just cleared in the FP like minutes ago. And it's headlined, My GLP-1 Nightmare. Now, her story is a little more complicated. Now, at the beginning here, she shows a little history about herself. If people don't know, she says, I grew up in the limelight with my appearance, scrutinized weekly from the time I starred in my own NBC show at 14. I was blissfully unaware of my weight back then. I was naturally lanky and athletic, and I ate whatever I wanted to, with no concern for weight gain. All that changed when I was a teenager. I was put on medication to manage my moods, and weight gain followed me from there. By my 40s, still actively working as an actress, I acquired a deep sense of shame around my body. At size 6, I felt obese. By the time social media arrived with its fixation on being thinner, more toned, more surgically perfected, that pressure tipped into a disordered relationship with food that I've spent years trying to untangle. And I think this is very, very common in Hollywood with people, right?
She mentions
that early menopause did not help. She's put 20 pounds on that she doesn't need. She says, I don't have the discipline, motivation, or time to lose them. Still, she says, that's not why I went on GLP-1. I went on a weight loss drug because a doctor told her that it might ease symptoms that she struggled with her entire adult life. So she was diagnosed with an autoimmune condition, Graves' disease. I've heard about this before. At the height of her health when she was 23. The immune system forgot that her thyroid was part of her body. It attacked it. It sent it into an overactive storm. She says it made her very, very sick. They got strong medications to work on it. In 1998, there was no discussion of diet or lifestyle or anything that we know. Well, no, she was saying on anything that could influence autoimmune conditions, right? And she admits that maybe she did things that slowly made that condition worse. She had 4 unexplained hernias, 4 exploratory surgeries. This is 25 years later. She is well past perimenopause and drowning in symptoms that she can't explain. She had full body rashes and welts, severe histamine reactions to foods and smells, palpitations, hourly wake-ups for an entire year, crying jags. I mean, she was a mess, right? And she talks about how, you know, these things came about and people couldn't really explain. There was a larger breakdown that occurred with all these things, but they couldn't really dial into what was wrong, right? So months ago, 3 separate doctors all suggest to Bialik that she tries a GLP-1, not because of the 20 pounds, but because the drugs have shown promise in reducing the systemic inflammation that drives autoimmune conditions. And she says by that point, she spent years of trying everything from hyperbaric chambers, infrared saunas, to detox medications and infusions. She says in this piece, I was exhausted from being sick, from the endless parade of specialists, from the diets, the protocols, the promises. Maybe this could be the magic cure, right? And she says, look, I know that 1 in 8, this is crazy, 1 in 8 Americans are taking them. Ads for Ozempic and Wegovy blanket our social media feeds. You know that, right?
Yeah.
You have Hollywood that can barely keep up with itself. Celebrities turning up unrecognizably thin on red carpets. I talked about Ryan Seacrest. His face just looks weird, and he wasn't fat, right? She says, I know many women who would not be considered overweight by any reasonable measure, but they're on these drugs because in LA, and unfortunately this is true, anything over a size 4 is considered hefty. She says one acquaintance was thrilled that her GLP-1 made her so nauseous that she was barely able to eat at all because it meant that the pounds fell away even faster, leaving her thinner and happier than that she had ever been. Another friend described the quieting of what those of us with disordered eating call food noise, the relentless mental chatter that accompanies every meal. So she kind of closes that chapter by saying GLP-1s have helped people, of that I am certain, but nobody talks about what happens when it goes wrong. And this is where it gets really, really scary. She says, I took one shot of the lowest dose of a synthetic GLP-1, and to say I had an adverse reaction would be somewhat of an understatement. Explosive, uncontrollable diarrhea, sulfur burps so violent they left me afraid to open my mouth in public, sneezing attacks every time I tried to eat or drink, which apparently has a name, it's S-N-A-T-I-T-I-O-N, snatchiation, cramping, bloating, full body aching as though I had the flu, and an inability to keep down even small sips of water without sprinting to the bathroom with yet more explosive diarrhea. And this goes on and on. And apparently it was a really, really bad, you know, closer to an allergic reaction that she had maybe once for a sinus infection. But this went on. And for the first 2 days, she says, I ate maybe 1 cup of rice and 1/2 banana and some broth. She couldn't, you know, get electrolytes down. So she really, really had a bad experience. But the broader point here is that her experience, as it turns out, she says, is far from rare. Nausea, vomiting, diarrhea are among the most commonly reported complaints with GLP-1s in the clinical trials. So this is a very, I got to get to George here with Tech Talk Tuesday, but this is crazy because she's very, very, you know, personal about this. She, you know, she admits that, you know, the medications are disruptive to the body. They know that. There's always, you can hear it in the ads. There's, you know, bad things that can happen from any drugs. But she said that one doctor said, expect a full month of alternating diarrhea and constipation, hopefully at decreasing frequency. Eat bland foods, drink water, don't get dehydrated. And then he also says some of the medications that she was already on are complicating her gut health. So she says, how many of us are on medications that are hurting us, causing inflammation, wreaking havoc on our symptoms, and then pile on more medications to manage the symptoms of those medications? I believe that's a rhetorical question. I think the answer to that is way, way, way too many people. I'm going to tweet that out. That column just cleared at the Free Press. It's frightening, but people should know about it.
Little Bob here. This summer, shop the latest small space solutions at Bob's Discount Furniture. From retro chic bedroom sets to stylish space-conscious Bob-o-pedic sofas, it's all at Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Tech Talk Tuesday with George Rosenthal of ThrottleNet. ThrottleNet.com.
Well, here he is, ladies and gentlemen, George Rosenthal, who a week ago sat down with me, gave me a great class on AI, and I've done none of the homework. I have failed you, George Rosenthal.
Come on.
I'm still intimidated by it. I haven't taken the steps, and I apologize.
Oh, man, that's okay. It's great to talk to you guys again. That's all right. Look, it's a slow process. I think you're along with 90% of the population is slowly starting to get into it. But look, just take baby steps, you know, start asking it how it can help you with every single thing you do. So when you do something throughout the day, work, home, when you think about your health, your workouts, your food, your diets, whatever you think about that day, just ask AI real quickly, how can you help me with this? And it'll tell you. And eventually you'll start to get to know it really well.
I'm going to do this here in about, let's see, about an hour from now, I'll be at Family Golf. And I'm going to say, Claude, how can I hit my damn driver straight? And he's going to fix it for me, right?
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Okay, good. That's my plan. All right. On a serious note, though, look, you talked about this last week, and now we know there was, you know, some announcement yesterday at this big Apple event that Siri, which I think has been very non-reliable lately, has been rebuilt by Google, right? So we're getting some AI changes with Apple working with Google.
So excited about this. I cannot even express to you. I'm like walking on water. So excited. So this is the biggest announcement for the iPhone in a long time, probably 10 years. And you know, I hate to say this, but goodbye, Tim Cook. Sorry, buddy. But that was your last keynote speech. You did a great job with raising the revenue of the company, but there was no innovation until basically now. They're copying what Microsoft did. So instead of creating their own AI, they're going out now and they're hiring basically their biggest competitor. They're paying Google $1 billion a year for this. So Gemini is going to run Siri, and it gets a little bit better. Give me a couple seconds. So this is a total overhaul of your entire phone. Your phone is literally about to become the most highly hyper-personalized, context-aware executive assistant you've possibly had. And everything that I talked to you about last week in AI at the office is about to be in your phone in a crazy way. It's going to use the camera and look at your eyes and see what apps you're looking at. It's going to know what you're using on the regular and help you with it. You're going to be able to talk to your phone and ask it which app is best for the situation you're trying to do. And then what's even greater about all of this is that this is something revolutionary that when it comes to Apple, because Apple's very good at dictating the hardware and the software that they want you to use. This is crazy. They're going to allow Anthropic, which is Claude, and ChatGPT, along with Gemini, into the operating system, into the iOS. So you're going to be able to choose whether you want Gemini, Claude, or OpenAI on your phone. And that is revolutionary because Apple's always dictated what you're going to use and how you're going to use it. Even though they're paying Google $1 billion a year, you're still going to be able to choose between the three of them. Now, the bummer is, and this is, I don't think this is intentional, but like we talked about last week, is the hardware that you're allowed to have is going to be limiting the capabilities of what's happening. Now, there's iOS 27 is coming on this. Oh, by the way, let me back up a second. This is all starting in September. So in September, you're going to get the big launch of iOS 27. Now, if you have an Apple 15, an iPhone 15, an iPhone 16, an iPhone 14, 13, you'll be fine with iOS 27. But it's the AI capabilities that will not be available to everybody. So if you have a 15 or a 16 Pro, you'll get very limited AI capabilities. If you have a 17 and what's about to be the newest iPhone announced in September, then yes, you'll have full AI capabilities that will help you with everything you're doing in all of the devices, iPads, MacBooks. Now, the MacBook does need the M3 chip or greater. So just keep that in mind if you're a MacBook user. Make sure you have the M3 chip or greater. But the capabilities that is about to change with all of your Apple devices is going to be revolutionary.
Okay, so just to be clear on when this happens, so it's still going to be the iOS that we're talking about is still in the future.
Yes. So you're really, really anxious. The developer beta, if you're a developer, software developer, it was launched yesterday. Now, the public beta version comes out in July. Even in the tech world and being in my career and everything that I focus on, I still don't do beta on my phone. I don't trust it. There's right. a lot of bugs. There's a lot of issues. So I will wait until September when they roll out the whole big launch. And that's also when they're going to roll out a new iPhone. So, and that's something where you got to just don't, I would not recommend going into the beta version in July. Just be patient. Come fall. Get ready for iOS 27.
Is there a real life example of when you say we'll have our choices between the three? How will that work? When we use Siri, Siri will ask us?
Yeah, so it'll be in the settings. You'll be able to change to Claude, or you'll be able to change over to Gemini. And again, what's great now is you have between now and September to start figuring out what AI platform you really like.
Right.
I would literally focus on those three, Gemini, ChatGPT, and Claude. And here's why, because it's all about the AI getting to know you, your habits, your workout habits, your diet, what you do for a living, how your family likes to take vacations, and can it help you plan a trip and do everything that you need to do throughout your day. For example, it will be able to look at your calendar and say, okay, you have five different things you have to do today. You have to go over here, you have to go over here. And it'll work with the map application that you use the most, whether it's the Google Maps or whether it's Apple Maps, and then help you plan the route for your entire day that works around the best traffic so you don't get late. It is crazy what this is going to do. It is going to integrate all of your applications into your daily habits and put it in your voice and be able to work with you every single day.
I had a conversation with AI, because of course me in the Samsung world, on my way in about changing hair and what shampoo I should buy and all of this stuff, George. And I mean, this AI was telling me completely right on stuff.
Really?
You
were testing it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, Sue's going through a transformation, a hair color transformation. It's a process.
It is a process.
I love it.
It's too in the weeds for me.
Yeah, well, I get it. But I'm saying, okay, well, what does toner do? What does this do? And they would tell me all the way in. And it's like you're having a conversation with a person.
It is.
It's bizarre.
Sue, let's go a step further, Sue. Let's say you go onto Pinterest, okay, and you start looking up hairstyles and hair colors that you really like, that you think would fit you. You then take a selfie of yourself, put it into the AI, then upload pictures from Pinterest, and it will tell you what it thinks will work best with you and how it's going to transition slowly over time. And do you need to go to a stylist or
yes.
can you do this at home?
Yes.
All of these different things are going to be, I'm telling you, it's fascinating and it's unbelievable that you have a coach on your phone.
Which one do you use? Do you use Gemini?
Gemini's on my phone.
And what do you do? Just talk to it?
Well, it's a Galaxy AI. Well, but yeah, whatever's on my phone. Yes, yeah, so I just say.
That's Gemini.
Say, okay, well, I don't want to set off phones, but if I just talk to Google, that's what it brings up.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then I search through that, and I have questions, and then at the end he'll say, well, all right, I hope we've helped. Have a safe travel.
Yeah, so he gave me last week, we went through all of the applications, and I have them on my iPad. I really need to do this, and I promise you, by next week I will have done the homework. And I can say that with confidence because I'm off next week. So you really won't be able to test me for 2 weeks.
Okay, can I tell George my nightmare?
Sue's got a story here we need some of your take on. So this is pretty crazy.
I was listening and I heard a brief second of what you said.
Okay, well, it was sometime over the weekend, I got an alert from LifeLock because I have the most basic LifeLock. And it said, somebody is trying to take out a loan in your name. Now, I already have my credit report things frozen, so you can't go get a mortgage in there. But it was a payday loan. So my phone is blowing up from LifeLock. So I call LifeLock, and LifeLock says, oh, yes, we've got a report of this. But you don't have the service with us that allows this to be blocked. Of course I don't, George.
But that's okay. That's okay.
And he
Here's
said,
what you need to do.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, he said, this one, I think it might have been Data X. I don't know. Whatever it was, they don't allow LifeLock to intervene. In other words, they can't go on my behalf because they think it's unsafe for an intermediary to get the information, which makes sense. So I had to fill out a report and then I mail it in and get the credit report, and then that is how LifeLock goes through and gets me my money back. But then my phone is blowing up with, oh, your loan has gone through with blah, blah, Borrowly and all this crazy stuff. And it was freaking me out. So I almost called you, and then I thought, well, that's not George's problem.
Oh,
but what should I have done?
No, you definitely should have called me. So the payday lenders, obviously there's three major credit bureaus. The payday lenders use two secret credit bureaus that you need to contact on your own right now. It's called Factor Trust and Clarity Services.
Oh, my God.
Factor Trust and Clarity Services.
Okay.
And that is what the payday loan industry uses as their credit bureau, because not everybody who gets a payday loan has a credit score. That's what's going on there. So you need to go to Factor Trust and Clarity Services immediately. And then also, I would 1,000% as soon as the show is over, contact your bank. Uh-huh. Call your bank. Tell them what's going on. They'll put you in the securities and frauds department. Tell them what's happening, and they will put a monitor on your bank account.
Oh.
Okay? It's very important you do that.
Okay.
So I'm glad you froze your credit, because that's the number one thing you have to do is freeze your credit. So no one can take out a car loan, house loan, whatever it may be, or even try and steal the title of your home.
Jeez.
So very, very important that you do that. But go to those two credit bureaus, file a report. The last thing I would absolutely do is make sure you go to the government website and file an official report called identitytheft.gov.
Okay.
So I know you have LifeLock. Don't rely on them to do that if you have the basic plan, but go to identitytheft.gov and file a report.
Okay.
If any money goes missing, if your credit score takes a hit, then make sure you file a police report.
Okay.
Because the only recourse you're going to have is that you actually said, hey, my money was stolen, this wasn't made up, and you have some sort of recourse. But at least you have a police report on file. You don't have to do that yet.
Okay.
But make sure you go to identitytheft.gov and those two credit bureaus and fill out the information.
Hey, Sue, you have more homework than I do all of a sudden. You know that, right? See you on Monday. I'll see you next Monday.
Oh, my gosh.
My goodness.
I did bump up in LifeLock so that they would prevent.
Of course you did. That's what they wanted you to do.
That's how they get you. But that's how to prevent any more of the payday loans. But should I still call Factor Trust and Clarity Services just in case?
100%.
Okay.
Yes, just in case. Because if they try it again, then the payday loan industry will see that and go, nope, we're not helping you get a payday loan.
George,
with that information.
How do they get the money? Like, in other words, where does that come from? Where do you get a payday loan? Will that go after my...
They'll falsify a paycheck. They'll falsify a paycheck with your information, your address, your name. They may have a lot of personal identifiable information. And in fact, once we're offline, send me a text. I need to run a dark web scan on you.
Okay.
And make sure I know what's out there for you. So when we're done, send me a text. I'll run a dark web scan for you, let you know what's going on. So at least you're not relying just on LifeLock to do this.
Oh,
Tech
thank
Talk
you.
Tuesday is where we scare the hell out of everyone because of things that are happening. All right, hey, I want one. We're short on time because of this, but I did want you to touch on one topic, and we can save maybe a couple of the others for next week. But the way that smart home tech might be tracking you and the effect that it could have on your insurance premium. You shared some of this information.
Yeah.
And this is interesting. Like, so I have, you know, if you have a security company or something like that, and they determine that you're not turning it on as much as you should be, you're saying they may charge you more for that, right? Or flag you.
Yes. Oh, this is a massive change in homeowners insurance. And everyone needs to pay attention right now. When you go to renew your homeowners insurance and it's up for renewal, pay attention to whether it's a variable rate. They're going to start doing variable rates across the whole industry based on monitoring your in-home activity with tech. If you have an in-home alarm system, are you setting it on the regular? Do you have water leak detectors, meaning under your sink, your water heaters, your washing machine, your refrigerator water line? If you don't have a water detection system, they can raise your rates. If you're not locking your doors, let's say you have a MyQ door lock or some sort of remote door lock or a keypad for your garage door opener. If you're not constantly using that, they will look at that and say, well, you're endangering your house and we're not insuring you for that low a premium. So this is going to change the whole insurance industry because they're going to look at your personal activities based on the tech in your house. And that's all going with AI. I'm telling you, this is going to change everything.
Whoa.
That's very interesting. And on that note, scaring you, we're out of time. George, great stuff. I'm going to do the homework.
Holy cow,
we'll talk
George.
Soon. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. George
you
Rosenthal, throttlenet.com. All right, so tomorrow night is the annual congressional baseball game in Washington, D.C. And they take this, they do this at Nationals Park. It's a baseball game. It's not a softball game. It's awesome. Eric Schmidt, man, he has been in the cage working on his hitting. He's become one of the stars for the GOP team. He's going to join us. I told him tomorrow, we're not going to talk politics. We're going to talk baseball tomorrow. This game is a lot of fun. I've been there in person. They, you know, I was at the Cardinals game the other night. There were probably, you know, they said 24,000. I don't think there were 24,000 in there. They'll draw 24,000, 27,000 to Nationals Park tomorrow night. A lot of the staffers from Capitol Hill. It's a great event. It's for charity. And it's on TV, too. So we'll get a preview of that tomorrow afternoon. I think that Fred has the roundtable set already for Friday. Former State Senator John Lamping and Ted House will be here as well. All right, I got a couple things here on Audio Cut of the Day.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the Audio Cut of the Day.
Okay, this is not one that I anticipated using, but it's something my friend Scott Jennings tweeted this out, and I retweeted it. These are, you're going to listen to something here from Ivy League ex-Bernie Sanders staffers who recruited Graham Plattner. And the tone that this interview, you know, really exudes is quite unusual. They seem to think it's funny because they were the ones that were trying to vet Graham Plattner to see if he had any bad things, you know, in his closet.
And at this point, you hadn't vetted Graham Plattner. You hadn't done a full scrub of who he is. How did you go about vetting him? And why did you?
We paid a nice firm a whole chunk of money and got some stuff back. Some of what you've seen on the news we got back. Other stuff we didn't.
Did the vetting process turn up the tattoo that became so controversial?
No.
The Reddit posts, did that turn up in the vetting process?
Awkward pause.
The firm sent us a thing, and it had some of the posts, but it didn't have all of them.
How is that possible? Like, who are you paying here to do your vetting, right? So, and these are former Bernie staffers. Right? Keep that in mind.
And what did you think about that? How did you think your way through the fact that he had posted these things on social media?
I said none of this will or should stop him from becoming a U.S. Senator.
And what was your thinking there? Agree.
I think if what the voters wanted were people who were grown in vats and had never done or said anything that they might regret their entire lives, we'd have a very different country. Part of our thesis here is that people do not want their candidates grown in vats. They want people who are real human beings, and they want people who do not look and sound like the vat-grown people who've been leading this country off a cliff for the last century. And that was Graham.
Well, first of all, that guy has the weirdest voice.
What is going on there?
I don't know, but they're defending. I mean, they're mocking, they're laughing that the, you know, the vetting process didn't reveal not only the Nazi tattoo, but the Reddit post. Oh, they shared some of them, but they didn't care. I think what you know, the takeaway from that is they don't care. By the way, the last part of his premise is not inaccurate. I think people.
Yes, I agree.
But what they don't. But with Graham Plattner's not that guy.
No.
Okay.
No.
You know, Eric Schmidt is that guy. He really is.
Yes.
He's like a real person. Josh Hawley is not that guy. But Graham Plattner is kind of the opposite of that guy. I guess maybe they think because he's a, you know, a real guy and he's connecting with people in Maine. But it's outrageous that this guy has been able to get as far as he has. Now, Susan Collins has been keeping her mouth shut about Graham Plattner, and she finally said something.
The allegations against Graham Plattner are extremely troubling and serious, and he owes the people of Maine a detailed answer.
Look, there's more and more stuff that's going to come out, and most of the experts, the pundits inside and outside of Maine think in the end, keep in mind, this is the primary, this is today, he's going to win it, but they think Susan Collins will still hold the seat. There's some theory that Angus King, who is the other senator from Maine who caucuses with the Democrats, but he is an independent, might actually endorse Susan Collins. That would be interesting.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.